Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. Mike Costantino is here with me. I'm Steve Williamson. This morning we have Avi Chomsky, who's an expert on immigration. She's a professor of history and a coordinator of Latin American affairs at Salem State College in Salem, Massachusetts. I was going to make some jokes about witches in Salem, but I've been to Salem and I realize it's a big part of the tourist industry there. They have like in the rest of the country, we have Christmas stores. They have Halloween stores all over the
country. I remember not so long ago that they were not crazy about their witch past. Didn't they try to call themselves Danover for a long time and kind of shunned the Salem name?
But then they realized there was some tourism to be gained by playing up the witch history. So that's what's happened in the last 20 years or so.
For folks in Arizona, it's a beautiful town, about 40,000 people. We wanted to talk about your book, and Avi Chomsky's book is called They Take Our Jobs and 20 Other Myths About Immigration. We're not going to have time to talk about all 20 myths, but let's start with the title of your book, Immigrants Take American Jobs.
Okay. So as you pointed out, the book is based on discussing a series of myths, and obviously I think that's the myth that I used for the title and for my first chapter of the book, the myth that immigrants take American jobs. And I think that when people state a lot of these myths, they're also expressing some sort of unspoken ideas that they haven't quite articulated even to themselves, but that underlie what they believe. And underlying this myth of immigrants take American jobs, I think, are some ideas about how the economy functions that I think are really flawed. When you say immigrants take American jobs, you're sort of imagining a world economy that's based on countries, each one of which is sort of hermetically sealed and has a certain number of jobs in it and a certain number of people in it. And
that's
obviously
true.
That's not how the global economy works at all. We live in an extremely integrated global economy. And the way that the United States has participated in this global economy for the last years or so has been through having domestically what's called a dual labor market. Hello, are you there?
Yeah, we're here.
I heard a buzz.
It's the witches in Salem or, you know, a kind
probably
of
trying to hack into our phone call.
Steve keeps nodding off, but I keep poking him. We're here.
Yeah.
So the dual labor market has created one set of jobs in the United States that are what we might call good jobs, the kind of jobs all of us want to have, where we have security and decent pay that you can raise a family on and benefits and safe working conditions. And then there's the secondary labor market, which functions kind of underneath that labor market of good jobs, which is the jobs that all of us don't want and hope that our children aren't going to have. They're the jobs that are dangerous, that are extremely unpleasant, that have no security, that have really low wages, below minimum wage. And those jobs have always been done by people who have been politically excluded, whether they have been slaves, whether they have been people in other countries, whether they've been domestic workers. Agricultural work has always belonged to this labor market of really unpleasant, insecure, dangerous jobs. And agricultural work is one that has always been done by Latino immigrants in the West, African Americans in the East and the South. So maintaining a group of people as politically excluded to do those sort of dirty jobs that all of us who have decent jobs depend on because we all use the products of those jobs. One of the jobs in the modern economy that's really heavily immigrant in Massachusetts, I'm not sure about Arizona, is newspaper delivery.
I don't think so here. I think it's, you see a guy up on a roof. It's in Phoenix. It's 120 degrees. He's a roofer. Maybe he's an illegal immigrant. Hasn't he taken the job from somebody who would be a legal guy who would be up there on that roof? And not that anyone would want to.
Yeah, not so much, I would imagine. So it is part of a long tradition of the labor market at that level is held by certain groups.
I would emphasize, rather than illegal, I would emphasize politically excluded, because those jobs throughout the history of the U.S. have always been done by people who are politically excluded, and that's how the government and employers have been able to maintain them as bad jobs, by politically excluding the people who do them. And those of us who are fortunate enough to be politically included are the ones who reap the benefit of people who don't have rights doing those jobs that are maintained in really bad conditions. Well, illegality is only the most recent manifestation of how our laws have served to exclude some people from political rights so that they can be exploited in these bad jobs.
Well, that's it. There's more than one businessman, certainly in Sedona, that one business person that would say we're shooting ourselves in the foot by declaring these workers illegal when they perform a function that we've relied on for generations.
What we hear out here, though, is the big thing I hear from my right-wing and conservative friends is, Mike may have the phrase better, what is it that you don't understand about illegal?
Yeah.
These are illegal people, and then other people will say they're undocumented, but they're illegal. I mean, you can be an axe murderer, but you're not an illegal person.
What part of illegal don't you understand every time you try to argue for the rights of undocumented workers? And we had this talk just before we went on, and I read in a source somewhere that's a conversation stopper. I mean, you can't have a rational discussion about immigration after somebody says that.
Well, I mean, my usual response to that is to try to stop people, get them to think a little bit more and say, what part of illegal do you understand? That is, illegality is a social and political construction. It's a modern construction, and it's something that it's a status that was created for a reason, for reasons of political economy. Just like slavery is a status that was created for reasons of political economy. Now, once you've created a status and ascribed it to some people, like said, okay, this group of people falls into this status, then you can use it. It sort of becomes tautological. It justifies itself. So you can say, well, of course that person doesn't have rights because that person is a slave. Well, of course that person doesn't have rights because that person is illegal. But you have to get rid of the of course and say, well, why have we created a status that makes some people illegal?
One of the things I thought was interesting point that you made in your book was, compared to the number of jobs that, say, illegal immigrants are taking here, and we didn't hear that argument much in the anti-immigrant movement in the last couple of years, because I think most people in Arizona would laugh because they know that nobody wants to take those jobs. I mean, you're out in the sun, you're out in the heat, you're doing landscaping and stuff. One of the points I liked was that compared to the number of jobs that have been shipped overseas, the number of people filling in these low-income jobs here, it's almost insignificant. Our whole industrial base has been shipped abroad for cheaper labor.
Well, that's another part of the misconception that I was saying, to imagine the U.S. economy as something that's hermetically sealed. In fact, every economic transaction that takes place in the United States has global connections. There's not a single product you can buy that doesn't have some kind of global history behind it. Everything we wear, everything we eat, everything we drive, everything comes out of a global economy.
Good point.
Just want to mention about the presence of immigrants is that immigrants who come and do jobs in the United States also, of course, create jobs in the United States, because they not only work, they also consume. And so every activity that they take part in creates jobs.
I think that's what they didn't really understand. Here, the emphasis was all on the cost. They go to hospitals, their kids go to school. I think economists have kind of stepped in and said, well, you ran a whole bunch of people out, and then, you know, the guy went to a barber, and the barber shop closes, and the store closes, and the restaurant closes, and so forth and so on. They don't realize that, you know, to some extent, economic vitality is based on an increased population.
Exactly. And that when there's a really good film about that called 9500 Liberty, a documentary that looks at a county in Virginia where legislation essentially started to drive immigrants out, and it looks at the economic collapse that followed the exodus of immigrants, just what you described. Houses go on the market and no one wants to buy them. Businesses close, restaurants close. When people leave, jobs are lost as well.
The pricing of housing is going to go up here because so much of it is based on a low-cost labor market. If you go to Toronto, Canada, a roofer is a union guy. He makes a good salary, supports his family, sends his kids to college. Out here, it's what you call secondary economy rather than first economy.
Well, I have a wonderful local example, a good friend of mine, a guy named Tomas Biele, just passed away. But he had a Latin newspaper, and what happened is advertising, the car companies, the local car dealerships, lost sales and he lost sales. And then people that advertised apartments in his newspaper, we had incredible numbers of vacancies. I mean, we were talking, 20,000-30,000 people left our area, both legal and illegal, because of some of the laws that they saw as being targeted. They were targeted, and they ran. Moving on to taxes for a second, this is something, it's a 2005 New York Times article that said illegal aliens, undocumented workers pay $7 billion in Social Security taxes.
And that's actually been updated as of 2010. The Social Security Administration was reporting that undocumented immigrants are paying $12 billion in the year 2010. So that's increasing rapidly.
We don't have much in the way of, in Arizona, of income taxes. And so illegal immigrants, whatever you want to call them, undocumented people, and there were a lot of them when they began closing the borders in California. We just got to 2 minutes, Avi. We're running a little short of time. Did you want to talk about not paying taxes? Because the taxes here, they all pay.
So there's many forms of taxes that everybody pays, sales taxes, gasoline taxes, property taxes. That is, in order to live and engage in economic transactions, you're automatically paying taxes that have nothing to do with your work status, your citizenship status. But most people who are undocumented also pay other taxes because in order to work, they have to either be using a taxpayer identification number, which is legal, or a Social Security number, which is false. Either way, they're paying taxes. And those taxes are going into the tax system, whether it's Social Security or unemployment insurance, workers' comp, whatever taxes, income taxes they're paying. But they're not eligible for any of the services. They'll never be eligible for Social Security, for unemployment, for an income tax refund, because the numbers they're using are false.
Yeah, they think this is just a tax for being here undocumented. The money goes in, doesn't come out. We'll be talking with Avi Chomsky next week.
Yeah, we'll continue this for sure.
Yeah, because immigration is such a complex a subject that we couldn't cover it in one show. So we'll be discussing two shows. You can visit our website, www.vvid.org, Verde Valley Independent Democrats, or you can just Google Democratic Perspective on the Internet, and you'll end up on our show, hopefully.
Yeah.
All our shows are saved as podcasts.
We'll be right back. You've been listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.